And I'm Norman Gilliland. Welcome to the midday for, it must be about a Tuesday. And as promised, we have some guests in the studio today. They are Turner Collins, who plays the Irish harp and some other instruments too, and Sheila Shigley, who plays all kinds of instruments and has that voice that you may have heard on Simply Folk, or you may have heard it in the context of Navin. And Navin, that a cappella vocal quartet, has performed during the midday a time or two also. And so welcome to both of you. And they're over there getting in configuration.
Hello.
Okay.
Good
so,
afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Nice to have you here on the midday, Turner Collins. The Irish harp, which you, of course, have with you, is an instrument that will require a little bit of... Now you're over there. Okay, I see. You consolidated. That's why I didn't see
you're
you.
Wily.
Okay. And this is an instrument that might require a little explanation for people who just think harp and don't really know one from another. It's a lovely wooden instrument, I can tell you that from the beginning.
Yeah, it's depending on what kind of terms you like or terminology you like, it's an old instrument, maybe not ancient, but that's often applied to it. It's a triangle-shaped instrument with a sound box on it. Once upon a time was strung with metal strings. Now they use combinations of nylon or bronze, or the both. And so it's an instrument of a long, long history, a little bit distinct history from the concert harp in the orchestra. Somewhat distinct history from the Austrian harp and other folk harp and the Mexican harp and different folk harps from around the world, but they're all sort of related. This is, however, one of the earliest triangular shaped harps in the world, if not the earliest.
And how does one get into playing the Irish harp? Is it typical to start with something smaller, or do performers on the large harps scale down?
In my world, meaning the so-called folk harp world, people typically start on smaller harps. However, if people have their sights set on classical music, they often start out with a rental classical harp, or what they call an orchestra harp or symphonic harp. There's different names for it. And our modern harp in the orchestra is actually a synthesis of many, many folk harps from around the world, of which the Irish harp or the Scottish harp, Celtic harp, is one. Forerunner.
And then, so how did you actually get into playing the Irish harp? You mentioned from smaller instruments.
I'm from a folk music family. I did not grow up playing music, but everybody around me did. My mom, my dad, my brother, my sister. My parents both played gospel and mountain music. I grew up in the Missouri Ozarks. And so there was a lot of banjo and fiddle and guitar and auto harp and hammer dulcimer and lots of singing around. And at some point I realized that a lot of what I grew up with was much older than just us and the immigrants to my part of the United States. And I, as a teenager, I got kind of fixated on this kind of music. And frankly, my senior year in high school, someone, a girl who I wished was my girlfriend, lent me an album of Alan Stivell, a harp player from Brittany, and it literally changed my life.
Well, just having come back from that Wisconsin Public Radio trip to Ireland for 10 days, I must say I was taken more than once by the feeling of continuity there between Ireland and America and the music. When you hear some of the indigenous Irish music, you're starting to think, well, that with a little twist would be bluegrass, or it would be American folk music, or it would even be blues.
That is so true. It's a major contribution. And I think that with the various waves of interest in folk music or folk revivals, which seems to happen every decade, people get more informed about this, and their ear is sort of cocked toward that. And it's an interesting stew we enjoy in North America, that's all I can say.
Some of it's an Irish stew. Well, having said that, you have a lot of music to share with us today. And what do you have first?
Well, we have various pieces that represent different things about not only Irish culture, but Celtic culture. Sheila and I are well known for playing Irish and Scottish music, but we're actually interested in the whole family of so-called Celtic peoples. But we're going to start off with one that's from a collection in the 1800s. It's a tune called The Pleasures of Hope. I literally don't know anything about the origins of this tune. It was written down as an air. I just adore it. I don't even know what the person who made it up. Everything we're going to play today is anonymous except for a couple of numbers. I don't know what the author had in his mind, but it is a gorgeous tune. And that's the best I can say. I hope you enjoy it. The Pleasures of Hope.
The Pleasures of Hope. Where did you find that song?
Oh, it's interesting. You should ask. Some years back, it's probably 8 years back, my boy, who's now entering UW-Madison this week, was a wee babe. I was called up out of the blue. I was laying in the bathtub, as a matter of fact. And I got a call from the Milwaukee Repertory Theater to play in a Irish play and lived there for about 4 months. The play was called The Shahran. This was a tune from the play. And I'm happy to mention the name of the musical director of the play. Her name is Maria Torres, who's a great arranger, composer, fiddler, band member out of Milwaukee. And she hired me for this play, so I played with a trio of musicians for the run of this play in Milwaukee, and that's how it came by that tune.
Do you do a fair amount of that kind of thing? I was going to say playing around, but I don't mean it quite that way.
I don't. I'm a free agent. And sometimes things drop out of the sky, and I literally was laying in the bathtub when I received the call to go play at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
And you had an astute driver, as I recall.
Sheila transported me to and from Milwaukee numerous times during that, that work stint.
Neither of us remembered that until just now.
That's above and beyond,
I would say. Anyway, Sheila and I were recounting how long we've worked together on the way here. My son, as I mentioned, is entering UW this fall. And Sheila and I first worked together when her band, Navin, whom you mentioned, came over to my house. They discovered me, I discovered them. We thought we'd work together when my son was in diapers. So it's about 18 years Sheila and I have been working together. We worked out the math on the way here.
You have, in addition to the Pleasures of Hope, you have the March of the King of Laos. What does that refer to, L-A-O-I-S?
What looks like Laos is the Leash.
And I'm not even going to try
that's
the Irish
okay. It's one of the counties in Ireland, and it's actually an old quote-unquote kingdom. So what we're talking about is chieftainships, not really what we would call kingdoms in the modern sense. However, this is a tune that comes from that part of Ireland, Leash, the county Leash, and in old times it was a kingdom. And this tune is known by many titles, the March of the Kings of Leash, the March of the King of Leash, the King of Leash, and other things that I'm not sure the origins of, but many of these things don't have fixed titles. However, I have this on because I've had a kind of I'm on a jag with playing marches. I know a lot of marches, and I presented a bunch of them at Milwaukee Irish Fest last weekend, and I haven't really met many harpers who will play that many marches or medleys of marches, so I thought I would play a couple of things that are truly ancient from the harp tradition. The first one is a march from the court of the ancient kingdom of Leash. The second one is called O'Neill's March or O'Neill's Cavalcade, and it's the nearest equivalent that I know of to a clan march from Ireland. It's truly a tune from the O'Neill family, which is a very, very early family in Ireland. So these are two rather older tunes. The first one is quite old, before the Middle Ages. The second one is somewhat after. It's hard to fix it at a date. The authors are unknown. So the March of the Kings of Leash and O'Neill's March.
Thank you.
The March of the King of Leash and O'Neill's Cavalcade, at least those are some of the names by which those marches, traditional Irish marches, go. And they were played there by Turner Collins, who's brought in his Irish harp for the midday today. And Sheila Shigley was playing something called the Boron, which is an Irish drum, and provided a nice little accent. She was playing the fiddle, by the way, earlier in one of our pieces.
I'm representing the kind of person that comes along and jumps in with somebody who's playing on the street. And, you know, they're hoping to play alone, and then some ne'er-do-well comes along and just insists on playing along. But actually what we're doing is very, very representative of what happens. People will – it's not – it's like a shared – it's a shared vocabulary, not so much a shared perfect – repertoire. You know, you probably have a version, let's say if I've wandered in from another county, you have a version of that. It might not be the same. And so people often ask if there are harmonies in Irish music, and sometimes you would get incidental harmonies because two people would play a slightly different version of the same song at the same time. So people like to say that in the old days there weren't harmonies in Celtic music, but I would beg to differ.
Well, in my view on it, and when people ask that question, because a lot of so-called Celtic music, pick your country, is in unison, they have a different sense of harmony, and it is certainly not a Greek or a Western European one. People often classify many kinds of Celtic music as essentially non-Western European from their outlook on things like harmony. Doesn't mean they say they're outsiders or anything like that, but, you know, from that kind of analytic point of view, they are looking through a different lens. There's no question about it. And that's why you hear so many people. Of course, there's Welsh and Irish and Scottish choirs, and there's lots and lots of unison singing. So powerful traditions in both ways. But Sheila's right about it being an ongoing dialogue, and most of the things that we're playing today were not and are not set in stone. Most of these songs are still, or tunes, themes, are still alive and in evolution and subject to playfulness or improv.
And yet, again, in Ireland or in Scotland, for example, people of all ages just seem to know these tunes in one form or another.
You know, what you're talking about is basically the survival into the 21st century of oral culture. They've simply got it by osmosis. They didn't study in school. They grew up around it. You know, things like we know, like people say to themselves, why do I know that tune? Even, I mean, in our own world, it's like because you've been exposed to it so many times, you don't even know what it's called. It can be a commercial jingle, but this has been true for centuries about all of us. We just notice it about the Celtic countries. Sheila and I made a plan to play some hymns today, and we're going to do three in a row. And these are hymns that came from Celtic music from both Protestant and Catholic traditions. And the first one is from Wales, Welsh Methodism. And I have pretty anti-Methodist feelings regarding what they did. Reformation? Reformation in Wales was pretty much a killer of folk dance and folk play instruments and stuff like this. And many of these kinds of religious revivals often, like, wiped out huge swaths of folk culture. But this is a tune, which I don't know anything about the origins of the melody, but it's called O Jesu Mawr, O Great Jesus, and it's a gorgeous, profound tune. I don't care what the origins are. It was usually sung in the Welsh language. I heard it on a pop music singer's tape years ago because I worked at WRT, and I went, wow, I have never heard a hymn like that. And I'm a big fan of hymns of different traditions. After that, we're going to play a very Catholic hymn called Slain, traditionally, but its modern name is Be Thou My Vision, which I wasn't raised Catholic, but when I moved to Wisconsin, I met lots of people who were raised with this song. And another one that most of us know from 1970s pop music, a song by Cat Stevens, Morning Has Broken, the words, which is that these in many Lutheran and other Protestant hymnals, were written in the 1920s by a woman named Eleanor Farjan, but the tune is far older, and is the melody is known as Bunessan, which is the name of a town in southwestern Scotland. So we're going to give you a medley of three hymns in a row, first one Protestant from Wales, second one Catholic from Ireland, the third one Protestant from Scotland. Just to give you a sort of a little smorgasbord of hymns from different parts of the Celtic world.
Thank you.
Three hymns, Turner Collins, the harpist, and Sheila Shigley providing the fiddle there. And we'll get to our 12:30 quiz question and hear more from Turner Collins and Sheila Shigley, all of that right after this here on WPR. Now to review yesterday's 12:30 quiz question, which went like this. In the 1940s, an American was turned down on a $1 million offer to have what stone tour the United States? It was the Blarney Stone. They just didn't want to pry it loose from Blarney Castle over there in Ireland. That was yesterday's question, and today's, actually, as is occasionally the case, takes the form of a venerable Irish verse form, but I'm not sure venerable is quite the word. Traditional, let's say. So what we have here is a limerick, and you tell me what life form is being described in it. You might say they are better just seen from afar when they're venting their spleen, but you cannot refute that if wild and mute in Great Britain, they're owned by the Queen. What would that be? You might say they are better just seen from afar when they're venting their spleen, but you cannot refute that if wild and mute in Great Britain, they're owned by the Queen. What is being described there? You've got about 25 minutes to come up with the answer, get it right, and you just might win the prize today. And you can email your answer to me at midday@WPR.org, or you can call 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Mary Kate. And now back to Turner Collins and Sheila Shigley and more from the tradition of the Irish harp.
Well, thanks very much. We're so happy to be here and sharing this music. Sheila and I were talking beforehand. I was telling her how I always like to try to have some strategies or framework or some kind of lens through which to look at things. And one helpful lens is one thing that ties the so-called Celtic countries together is viewing things in triplicate. Literally, it comes in sayings that come in threes.
Kind of like a shamrock.
Yes. The same method that St. Patrick brought Christianity to them was via a triad or the three-part leaf. And that's kind of an analogy for what I'm about to tell you about. A very old concept in Ireland that doesn't really extend literally to the other countries is the notion of music always falls into three categories. This is typical of Celtic culture. It's a way of organizing ideas. So those categories in Ireland were Goltry, Guntry, and Schwantry. Goltry, Guntry, Agisswantry. Laughing music, crying music, and sleeping music. So those were the literal names for these categories.
That.
But they're much deeper than they seem at first, that these categories, laughing music would obviously be party music or music of good times, up music, and the idea is up. But in the category of laughing music is also a motivational things like marches, things that which are military or clan or anything. Anything that's up and has is possessed of energy and an upful energy, because that's in direct opposition, kind of, to the category of crying music, which would obviously be laments or songs of sorrow or things lost.
There's a lot of parting in Irish music.
Songs of parting or things of long ago lost or songs of the ancestors are often fall into this category called gultry, music of tears, crying music. The other one is sleeping music, and the title literally, Shwantry, literally means sleeping music. But it's not necessarily all lullabies. That's the obvious aspect. Another one is things of music of not connection or engagement, like gantry, but more music of disengagement, which will help you sleep, meaning music that is maybe drifting. Maybe it's literally for sleep, or maybe it is to release the mind, or to connect the mind with many things. So there are lots of things which seem to be floaty but aren't sad. They aren't about loss. They're about disengagement as opposed to engagement. So all that aside, these three ancient categories in Irish music concept actually make a lot of sense when you're viewing even modern Irish music. They still occur in these ways. So it's just a different lens to look through. All that said, I'm going to play some things that are music of loss. This is gultry, crying music. And so Sheila and I are going to play, I'm going to play a lament from Ireland, and then Sheila is going to sing a lament from Brittany. Mine is called a lament for Owen Roe O'Neill from the same clan. I played the march earlier. And this is from the 1600s, and it was, I don't know if this is true, supposedly written by his wife after he died on the battlefield. At the Battle of Clontarf. And so whether that's true or not doesn't really matter. What matters to me is the profundity and the power of this tune. So Lament for Owen Roe O'Neill, and then after that Sheila's going to sing, and I'm going to play a song from Brittany, which is from a kind of song called Gwairs, which are songs of high dramatic content. It's definitely of a crying music category. And to me, the song is called The Death of My Beloved, Mauro y Ma Mestres, in the Breton language. Thank you.
And the name of the song again?
The Death of My Beloved.
And that was Breton, did you say?
Yeah, from Brittany, France, just south of Normandy. So, yeah, welcome to the gloomy part of Celtic music, but they're pretty famous for that.
Yeah, it's all good stuff. We're going to be hearing more from Turner Collins and Sheila Shigley as we get into this final quarter hour of the midday today. All of that after this here on WPR. Here's our quiz question again. In the following limerick, what is being described? You might say they are better just seen from afar when they're venting their spleen, but you cannot refute that if wild and mute in Great Britain, they're owned by the Queen. What are they? You have about 10 minutes to come up with the answer to that. Get it right, you might win the prize today, and you can email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org. Or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Mary Kate. And we'll get it all sorted out in about 10 minutes here on WPR. And now back with Turner Collins, Irish harp and vocalist and man of many parts, and Sheila Shigley, who is providing, let's see, so far violin and bowron and also vocals.
Well, we're happy to be here with you, and we're sort of presenting a cross-cultural little session. But we just finished with a very sad song from Brittany, so we thought we'd do something to counterbalance it with a dance song from Brittany. They have lots of dance traditions that involve singing, people dancing to people who are singing to animate the dancers. So this one is called the Cider Song, the Sonargiste, and it's a singing. I'm not going to translate the lyrics here for you, but it's very widespread, so widespread, in fact, that the tune traveled to Germany. I don't know how. I was trying to look it up yesterday. And it's a very popular drinking song called Was wollen wir trinken? And I'm not going to translate.
What will they drink?
The same tune, but it went to Germany. In addition, this is the tune for the Socialist Party of Belgium. I don't know how they came by it, but the good tunes travel, that's the best I can say. Be that as it may, when I first learned this tune, I thought that it was an ancient traditional theme, and it turns out it's not. It was written in it's been traced to the 1920s by a pair of brothers who were field workers, Jean-Louis Prima and his brother Jean-Bernard Prima of Brittany. And these two guys came up with the tune and the words of the tune we know, the song we know now. However, like oral tradition, this song traveled from village to village to village to village and accumulated hundreds of verses, localized verses that people would make up to this theme. So it's a perfect example of a tune that's alive beyond the people who made it up. It keeps adding on. So this is very widespread, as I'm trying to describe, and so we'll sing you our humble version of it. And if you're a fan of Navin or any of the bands I've been in, you've heard this song before, but we're happy to present it again, the Cider Song.
I'd say the brothers were onto something there. And it's funny how these things can just sound timeless.
Well, you know, you get a theme that it doesn't matter where it came from. If it's appealing to people, it will usually travel. I think of things like, what's the one from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Some of which was written in the 30s, themes, and they sound like they're 100 years older.
Caught people's
attention
and...
One Fine Morning is one.
Oh, there are so many from that particular motion picture, and the soundtrack turned my parents, who were in their mid-70s, on, you know.
That's a great soundtrack.
And many, many young people as well. This is something that Sheila and I have often talked about. It's something that's in the air that hits multiple generations. It's not youth-specific. It's not post-retirement-specific. And that's what we're mentioning, is that these are things that hit across the board without regard to class or age. So that's kind of cool stuff.
Got time for one more?
Yes, we do. And this is a song of parting. It's a little on the sad side, but I'm so fond of this one. And you don't mean to go too researchy on the listening audience, but the more you know about this stuff, the deeper it becomes. This is a song called Farewell, or Slán le Funeri, Farewell to Funeri. It was written in the late 1800s by Reverend Norman MacLeod, who was a Presbyterian minister on the Hebrides Islands, the island of Funeri. The outer islands, north of the Highlands. And this is a song of farewell to his congregation. He had served most of his adult life to this community and then was going to be stationed in the latter part of his career back on the mainland in Scotland. And he composed the song as a farewell to his congregation. And so the song, we'll sing it partly in English and partly in Gaelic. But it's just a beautiful theme, full of emotion of people you've known and having to say bye to them, simply. And I want to thank you for having us today, Norman.
A great parting song for the midday today.
The wind is fair, the day is fine, and swiftly flows the time. The boat is floating on the tide that wafts me off Refugee. Tender ties awake this day my plaintive sighs. My heart within me almost dies at thought of leaving Fionnuala.
Farewell to Fionnuala, a Scottish song, Norman MacLeod being the composer, and they blend very nicely. And thank you for coming in and sharing old and new, should we just call it Celtic music, some Irish, some Scottish, some Breton, some Welsh, all of that. My guest today has been Turner Collins, and I can't exactly call Sheila Shigley a guest since she spends many a time here at WPR and is, of course, one of our Simply Folk hosts.
Happy to be here.
Great having you with me today for the midday. And now to the results of our 12:30 quiz question. What are they? You might say they are better just seen from afar when they're venting their spleen, but you cannot refute that if wild and mute in Great Britain, they are owned by the Queen. Those are swans. And Carol Wise of Elkhart Lake is our winner today. We're going to send you, speaking of queens, a book called How to Ruin a Queen, Marie Antoinette and the Diamond Necklace Affair. We'll also put in a nice little Irish coin that has a harp on it. How's that? Stay right there. After a minute or two, it's the Writer's Almanac here on WPR.